Epstein, Reel 2. It's interesting, you know, both these episodes, the interaction of the audience, was this sort of sharing of information, or was it sort of controversial debate?
No, it was never controversial. I mean, it was just after my reading, and let me explain my readings too. I read relatively little from my book, but I spoke freely about my experiences and saying it's in the book, but I just feel more comfortable reading, speaking freely, because when you read, your face is in the book. And you don't know what the audience is doing. They might be sleeping. And I needed eye contact with the audience. And I also accompanied my readings and speaking freely with slides, which illustrated what I was talking about. And I found that to be the most comfortable way of doing it. But after each reading, there was what the so-called question and answer period. And it was that in most instances, but there was also some audience interaction where they talked with each other and with me. One of the concerns there was a difference of concerns expressed between the very young and the older people. There was the older people, there was some sort of sometimes had the feeling like people, they really knew what was happening at that time, but they didn't really want to admit it and say, well, you know, I was one of those people that didn't know about it. I lived in a small community and I didn't know anything happened. Or I lived in this large city and nobody knew because it was so large. But the younger people were talking an awful lot about the guilt that they feel. And resentful that they feel guilty, and resentful that, for instance, when they go, meeting with a group of about five or six young students, high school students, who wanted afterwards to meet with me privately to discuss some of their concerns. They said, we frequently go to Holland on holiday, and we, of course, talk German with each other. And then the Dutch people call us the bad Germans. We're not bad. We didn't do this. We weren't even alive then. Why are we still the bad Germans? And why do I feel so guilty? I wasn't alive. I didn't do anything at that time. And my response to the, you know, and was, you know, I don't think anyone can make you feel guilty. It is something that comes from inside of you. And what do you do with those feelings? And you have to, and perhaps to mitigate some of those feelings, and perhaps maybe you can never get rid of them altogether, is to take responsibility for what is happening now in your life. And it's sometimes perhaps risky to do this. It may be you're walking down the corridor in school and you hear two students talk about some other ethnic group in a derogatory way. And you could just say, well, they're talking, it's none of my business. But on the other hand, what you could do is say, I couldn't help but overhear what you were saying, and it really troubles me that you're saying this. And you may never know what happens after that. But the next time, these two are going to perhaps want to say the same or something similar. They may say, the last time somebody said it was uncomfortable for them. Maybe I shouldn't say this anymore. And you won't know this, but you will have made a difference. You will have made a change. And we don't always know what we do makes a change or makes a difference. But do it. There's a risk involved, but it's worth it. And it may help you get rid of some of your feelings that you have.
Did you also find, you know, it's interesting what you've been saying about the age factor. Did you find any differences, do you think, with gender between men and women, adult men and women?
I think women tend to talk more freely than men, but I think that is because women just tend to express their feelings more. Men are not supposed to have feelings, I guess. I think we need to raise our children differently so that men don't cry, you know, little boys don't cry. I think we need to start with the children. You know, we grown ups, it's too late for some of us, but we need to really consciously raise children differently.
I'm also thinking of the audiences generally, you know, why they would have come to hear someone talk about a Holocaust book. Were you preaching, if you like, to the converted?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking this, and I have the feeling that just from the kinds of questions and comments that these are not people that need to be convinced. The people that I really need to talk to aren't there, and I'm not really reaching them. Maybe some of the people that were there were sort of borderline or were beginning to think and wanting to hear something to help them move on a little further. But the people I need to talk to aren't there. One of the interesting things, I want to come back to the guilt part. I began to feel guilty myself that maybe I am generating some of these people, the guilt in some of the people there that perhaps didn't exist before, or even if it did exist, they didn't come thinking they were going to talk about it, and now I caused them to talk about it. So I started to feel guilty. And I mentioned that. I just said, you know, I'm beginning to feel guilty. Maybe you need to help me. In 1990, when I spoke at the school where I was thrown out of, I meant to talk, of course, about the math teacher, and I said, you know, now that I'm here, maybe I can get rid of this man, because he always interferes whenever I'm trying to make any math or arithmetic calculations. And one of the students, a 13-year-old, said, this student over there can draw real well. Maybe you could describe what the teacher looks like, and he could draw him on the blackboard. And so he did. And my son was with me, and he took a photograph of it. And I have a slide, which I showed when I talked about this. Well, when I was speaking at the university in Freiburg, a young woman comes up to me afterwards and said, I was in that class at that time, and I know who that boy is, or he's a young man now, 22 years old now, who drew this picture on the blackboard, and he's studying pharmacy at the university in Munich. And I said, well, not the next town that I'm going to, but the one after that. I'm going to meet in Munich, and I'm going to be reading at this bookstore, etc. He said, I'm going to get in touch with him and see if he can come. Well, he was unable to come, but he called me, and we had a long conversation about this. And neither one of them remembers who the boy was that suggested it, and I really would like to know what he's studying. Is he studying to be a psychiatrist?
You were saying earlier, Hedy, that talking is healing for people.
For you, yes.
Now, writing... You have written this book. How important was that?
There's only a certain amount of healing, I think, that can take place. And yes, it's always going to be hurting. It's always going to be painful. But it's not as raw a pain as it was initially. And so doing the book, it was just, I'm writing instead of talking, which is, and I guess the only thing was, obviously I couldn't write about everything. And I would have discussions with myself as though there were two Hedys there, and they were talking with each other. Why am I including this, and why am I leaving this out? Why is this important, and this is less important? And so I would have these conversations with the two heads, and the one would say, no, this has to be in there, and the other one would say, no, that has to not be in there.
And do you think that sort of puts somehow, does it put any sort of lid on your Holocaust experience? Mm-hmm. You know, is it a sort of grand finale, if you like?
No, it's not. And, you know, now the book is done and it's being sold, and I was on this reading tour, and as far as I'm concerned, I am divorcing myself from the book. It's, life goes on, and that didn't stop when I read, when I finished writing the book, it didn't stop when I went on this reading tour. And as a matter of fact, yesterday I got a letter from the publisher asking me whether I would consider coming back in 2000, because there are some places that are interested in hearing from me, because they couldn't be fit in my schedule when I was there in November of 99. So I'm willing to do that, but I, you know, it's just another thing to do.
Now, Hedy, I know you went to England in this year, in the summer of this year, to attend a kinder transport reunion. Yes, did you gain any sort of insights from this trip? Because this must have been important. You were going back, weren't you, to the country which accepted you in 1939, yes.
Yes, in June of 1999, there was a six-year reunion of those of us who came to England on a kinder transport in 1938 or 39. I myself came to England on May 18th, 1939. There were at this reunion, there were people from probably every continent in the world, and from many, many different countries, and of course, including England. The meeting took place in London, and there were over 1,200 people at this gathering. But then there were also a number of sub-reunions. Those of us who perhaps lived in the same girls' home or boys' home, those of us who belonged to certain organizations and so on. And I went to one of those reunions, and it was the reunion of those of us who belonged to the Free German Youth. There were 56 of us at this reunion. And it, for me, it was the reunion of all reunions. Those of us who were members of the Free German Youth, though we never really spoke about where we came from or how we came to England, I was surprised to find out how many of them came on a kinder transport to England that I had never known before. But we, because we came over there in England without family, or most of us at least without family, we became to each other, we were family. And even though we had not seen each other for maybe 50 or 60 years and had led totally different lifestyles, lived in totally different countries, and seen each other all these many years, it was like family. We were back together again. And we could pick up as though we had just seen each other yesterday, the last time, which is a wonderful experience. I mean, I feel such warmth still. And there's a lot of correspondence now back and forth, and telephone calls back and forth, people that we picked up again. And some of them, when I was on this reading tour in Germany in November, I saw some of them again that I'd seen in London. And again, it was, you know, we're family. We belong together. But what I also did, I came one day earlier before the kinder transport reunion started, because I wanted to retrace my steps. I wanted to go at least do a walk-by of all the places where I lived and the school that I attended. And much to my amazement, I was able to find every place without asking, how do I get there? And I had tried to find out, for instance, before I left, whether the school that I attended still existed. And the school was called Edgeworth Senior High. Well, I was told it no longer exists. And I couldn't remember the name of the street where it was, but I'm walking around in Edgeworth and determined I'm going to still find the school. And all of a sudden, as I'm walking on High Street in, I think that's the main street, at least it's the main street in Edgeworth, I see this little lane, and I said, that's it, I remember it. We had to go down this lane, and at the end of the lane is the school. And I walked down there, and sure enough, there was the school. And it apparently is still a school or an institutional setting. They had a big fence around it, and the gates were padlocked shut. And so I couldn't find my way in, and there was no name on it. But there were children, young children, playing in the on the playground. There was no adult there, so I couldn't ask anyone in there. There were some people that were walking past, and I asked them, you know what this is? No, I don't know. So I have no idea what it is, but the school is still there, and I found it. And all the houses that I lived in, with the exception of one, look as good as they looked then, or better even. One of them, for instance, had several additions to it, new additions to it. In fact, it was the first house that I stopped at. And just as I was getting ready to take a photograph, a man came out of the house, and he was wondering why I'm taking a picture of his house. And I told him I lived here a long time ago. And so he wanted to know more about it, and he was surprised how old the house is, because I told him when I moved there in the spring of 1940 with the family with whom I stayed at that time, the house was brand new, and he didn't know that it was that old. He wanted to know if it looked the same then, and I said no, it has all kinds of new additions in the front and the back, and has an extra floor, and has a new garage. And then he invited me to come inside so I could tell him how it looks differently inside. And this was really the only house that I entered. The others, I didn't try to gain entry into the others. The very first house that I lived in, there is a minister living in it now. And I spoke to a neighbor briefly, and she told me where I could find him, but I didn't look him up. When I left England in 1948, or even just within the time that I was in England, it was not a happy time for me in many ways. And I blamed England, and I blamed England wrongly. I didn't think this through. Maybe I wasn't capable of it at that time, of thinking it through. But I blamed England for not being with my family. And it certainly wasn't England's fault. I mean, maybe England could have accepted my parents, but it didn't. But it wasn't England's fault that I was there. England gave me sanctuary. And it wasn't England's fault that it was an unhappy experience for me, because I wanted to be with my parents. But now I have a totally different experience or different feeling about England, and a much more positive feeling. And it was topped off by a wonderful visit with Lynn Smith and her husband Peter, who spoiled me endlessly, beginning with tea served in bed in the morning. And no one has served me tea in bed since then, and I miss it.
Well, you've forgiven us then, the English.
Yes.
And Hedy, thank you very much indeed for yet another episode of your Holocaust experience. Thank you.